and welcome to the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. My name is Goff, and today we are joined by a very special guest. This man was a footballing superstar for the Brisbane Lions and the Port Adelaide Football Club. He was captain of the Brisbane Lions Football Club. He's done some work in the media of recent times, doing some commentary, and he also works at Commercial Point Finance. We're going to learn all about that and him and it. It's Tom Rockcliffe. How are you doing today, Tom?
Good, thanks, Goff. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I don't know about superstar, but yeah, I used to kick the footy around and completely different life now.
Well, you're an Australian captain. Plus, I'm a Lions nerd, so I say you're a superstar, so you're a superstar.
Yeah, no. Look, to be fair, I think I had an okay career, reasonable career, and loved my time at both footy clubs, both out and out, really, really good footy clubs and run really well. And the Brisbane Lions being almost a startup, not a startup, but a merge combine back in 98, and then obviously the Port Adelaide Footy Club, and it's been around forever. So, both got littered with tradition and history, and very fortunate to play for both.
You know, you're not contracted to any of them now. You can say, but so-and-so was a real giant knob. You know, you can get stuck into somebody if you wish, you know.
It is. And I was just thinking that before. I was thinking what we're going to talk about, what you're going to speak about, but you are certainly muzzled. There's no doubting that when you're involved in elite sport. Rightly or wrongly, you've got to protect the sponsors that pay your wages and the fans as well. And you're never going to keep everyone happy. You upset a lot of people along the way. But that is, I think, a bit of a frustration. It was certainly for me at certain times. I didn't certainly get everything right throughout my career, but you certainly couldn't speak your mind openly at different times.
Was that a catch-22 though? Because to be completely open, I'm a footballing nerd. I love me footy and the Brisbane Lions. But so I come from a very biased standpoint. But the one thing that's very obvious to me from the outside looking in, it's a cold chisel perspective standing on the outside looking in. It's a terrible joke. but standing on the outside looking in is that the media complain, oh, we want players to be themselves. And then you go, okay, well, here's my opinion. All right, we'll tear you down. Is that something that you're like? And then obviously the players go, oh, we'll just stuff it then. I'll just toe the party line and say it's a good win by all the boys and we'll move on with our life. Is that one of the frustrations of which you speak?
Yeah, I think so. I think you're caught exactly there. You're so well-developed now, media-trained, before you go and do interviews, given all the topics, almost your answers given, put your own twist on it to a degree, but you certainly have to toe the party line a lot of the time, and I think that would be frustrating for the media as well, because you turn up and you give the same 1 week at a time, don't want to look too far ahead, we're just got to... So all the same cliches come into it, but I think when someone does show a bit of personality, everyone jumps over them. So whether it be the media or the general public, if they're not your team and you show a bit of personality, then all of a sudden you're an outcast to a degree. The great case is Jack Ginnivan. I think that he's not the perfect straight up and down player, I don't think, but he gets criticised for everything he does because of the way he played a little bit, or the flair, he bleached his hair. And I think there's certainly an element to that, and it's a bit of Australians the way we are, that the tall poppy syndrome, we love to bring everyone down, don't we? It's just how we roll. So I think there is, I would love it to be a bit more open. You'd love to have more player access. I think at the moment, where the AFLW in particular is trying to grow and get to as a game, I think they do it really well. I've been lucky enough to do a bit of broadcasting with Fox Footy through the last couple of seasons, since I retired. And the access that they give and the cameras in the huddles, I think it's outstanding. And I feel like the men should do it. Obviously, you've got to have a clever producer, et cetera, in the back truck to edit stuff out that the certain clubs don't want. And even if you had a media manager from each club in there, just to make sure that there was no key messages going out, I think it would be a great element. You see it in American sports. It's fantastic having cameras and interviews in the rooms post-games. I think that's fantastic insight. And that's why they're paid mega bucks. So there's always a balance to it, but yeah, I think at some point we need to let go and let players have an opinion, get out there and say what they think. They don't have to support everything. I think there is a certainly frustration at times that if you may not believe in a certain cause that's topical of the times, you still, the AFL make a stance on it and you have to support it no matter what.
And so, yeah, no, well, I agree. But like I said earlier, I think also the media have created a rod for their own back because, again, they're the first ones to go, oh, you know, you shouldn't be saying that. I mean, you take Jack Ginnivan's a great example, you know, like he went to the trots the night before the grand final, goes to the horse races. Now, personally, if I was in his situation, I wouldn't have done that, but I'm not him.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm not him, man. So, I mean, and again, everybody's different. So if that's what he needs to do to relax and get his head in the right space, I mean, as long as he's not on the piss or on the snuff or whatever, then you know what I mean? Like, who's he hurting?
No, that's right. I think, and obviously, I think he had a horse running.
He did, yeah.
He was there for 15, 20 minutes to watch that horse. I don't think it's a big issue. Yes, it's the biggest game of his footy career, but also he's probably not going to sleep that well anyway. So if he can go and entertain himself for an hour driving to the races, watch that race and leave, as you said, if he's sitting there and having beers, then it's a different story, but he's not harming anyone. And if it was a Friday night, not middle of spring carnival, how would you know what he does on a Friday night anyway? So I think, yeah, it's a really relevant thing in AFL footy these days.
And people need to chill out and relax a little bit?
Yeah, they do. I think the thing is, you come in as an 18-year-old, and I was really raw from the country, grew up in country Victoria, great upbringing, parents and family support around, and you shift into state, and you're learning how to be a person as well. And at 18, I didn't know how to cook. I didn't know how to do much for myself, so I was lucky that mum did everything for me growing up. And then you get thrown in the deep end a little bit. I moved in with another player at the time, James Polkinghorne, and you just find your feet, and so you're developing and learning what works best for you. And I think we need to understand that AFL players, they're much more professional than that, and they continue to be, but they've still got to have a bit of a lifestyle outside of footy.
Hey, just a random question, being as you mentioned James Polkinghorne. So I'm assuming, because I was watching the Matildas, the soccer team playing, I'm assuming Claire Polkinghorne's his sister? Because there can't be too many Polkinghornes running around.
I don't think they're any relation.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah, that's no just relation, a I think.
Crazy coincidence.
Crazy, yeah.
How
yeah.
about that then? No, just a thing for me. No, no other listener is interested. That's right. Just for me. All right. Well, there you go. I learned something new. So let's talk about your start, because again, everything is from my memory. So if I've stuff up with a fact, feel free to correct me. But my understanding was you were overlooked in the national draft and then picked up in the rookie draft. So as a young bloke, is it like my dream's over because I haven't been drafted, and then 2 weeks later, oh, my dream's alive again because I just got on the rookie draft? Or did you know you were going to be, like, how did that work as a young bloke?
Yeah, so my story was a little bit different, I suppose. I broke my leg on the Gold Coast, actually, in the Nationals as a 16-year-old really badly, and had a couple of operations on it. And then as a 17-year-old, I couldn't do any sort of preseason and strung it and started to play some decent footy in the back half of that year. I could have been drafted that year, so I overlooked. And then the next year, my under-18 year, had a really good season. We went on to win the grand final. Steel side bottom kicked that 10 in the grand final, and I had a really good game, won the best and fairest, and we were a dominant team that year, and then missed out on the draft as well. And that was really, really challenging because for me, I was in one of the better teams and played really well, and felt like I should have got an opportunity. No one deserves anything in life. You got to earn and work for what you get. And I just felt like, I felt like I was going to get picked up. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. You've obviously speaking to recruiters, I think I spoke to about 14 out of the 16 or something like that. So generally, if you're speaking to a fair few, you've got a good indication that you're a chance. And there was a lot of talk that maybe sort of pick 20 to 30, and then as that rolls around, it gets to 40 and your name's still not out, and 50, 60. And I was back in the day where it wasn't on TV or anything like that. I think we had to listen to it on the radio. And yeah, you've got all your family around and mates, and they just want to see you get drafted and do well. And the longer it goes on, you almost feel a bit embarrassed and let down. And that was challenging as an 18-year-old. But yeah, lucky enough, a couple of weeks later, to go and train at Melbourne for a couple of weeks, they committed to me with their first rookie pick, which was number one in the rookie draft. But I was pre-season draft. So there was, I think, seven or eight picks. And I think my claim to fame was I was a pick before Ben Cousins, from memory. I think I was like pick five in the pre-season draft, and he was six to Richmond that year. So, yeah, I mean, I got in, and as I said, I was raw, probably a bit underdone, a bit overweight. and just not knowing, growing up in the country, you play footy on a Saturday and then, enjoy life away from that. So, always wanted to get drafted and had a passion. Lucky enough that Brisbane called out my name. Get on a plane the next day, fly up. I think did a 3K time trial, almost went backwards. I think it was about 14:50 or something. Like really, really poor for AFL players. But I knew it was going to be a long grind, and I got some shin splints in the preseason, but just sort of nutted away in the reserves. Got one opportunity in that first season and tasted it, played on the MCG in front of 60,000 against Collingwood, Simon Black's 250th game. And for the Lions fans out there, Dan Merritt kicked the first goal, which was, he went forward that week. So
that was a controversial one.
Yeah.
Everyone thought that the fix was in.
Yeah, well, he got backed off the map from memory. I think he was 120 in the 20s or something. So a lot of people made a lot of money that game. So yeah, once you taste it, then you just want it more and more. And I was able to go away. Craig Lambert was a welfare officer at the time, and he put me onto a guy named Ray Giles. So I drove to Melbourne three times a week, which is a four-hour round trip to train through the off-season, came back really fit and got an opportunity. I think I played from memory about 17 of the 22 games, and then just really started to find some momentum from there. Lucky enough to win the best and fairest in my third season, and went in the leadership group at the start of that year, and continued on.
So was it Craig Lambert that took you under his wing, or was there a specific player, or was there somebody that said, come with me, Tom, I'll show you the way?
Yeah, probably Lambo's is probably the one. They had a great welfare and support team there. Chris Johnson was there. He was involved in the reserves team and senior setup as well. Craig Britton was another one who coached, and he looked after all the young kids. It was hard and firm, the Britton brothers. They were tough, but it made you grow up and appreciate, and it's very different to what it is now. I mean, back when we started, if you were sort of a young up-and-comer, for half the drills you'd go on the back oval and just train, and a couple of rookies would be out there with you. So it was like, there's the elite over there, that's where you got to get to. So it made you appreciate it. And then when you got the opportunity to be with the big boys, and you walk in, you got Jonathan Brown, Luke Power, Simon Black, superstars of the competition, it's just an amazing experience. But they made you work for it, and you appreciate it when the opportunity arose.
Now, for a lot of your career at the Lions, it's fair to say we weren't a powerhouse of the competition. Not your fault, of course, Tom. You put the team on your back. But how do you keep morale up in a dressing room when the boys aren't really going so well on the field?
Yeah, well, it was tough. I mean, you speak about that. Vossi took over my first season. It was his first year in charge, and we played finals that year. As I said, I played the one game, and then I think I didn't play finals again. Like, I didn't play finals that year. I wasn't in the team, but I didn't play finals in the 9 years that I was there. And I think it was a year or two after that. So realistically, they were out for nearly 10 years. And it is tough. You set yourself up, and we felt like we'd get close. And the year that Vossi actually got sacked was 2013. And we missed by a kick almost. We had beat Geelong down in Geelong, and we had the opportunity. I think Ryan Lester went to snap one over his shoulder and didn't quite make it. Chapman dived on the ball, should have been done holding the ball at the top of the square.
But you don't hold a grudge.
No, don't hold it. And then, we didn't make it, and that was probably the closest we got. And Leper came in, and it just changed the dynamic a little bit. Moved on a lot of senior guys, and then you do it again, and then we lost some kids, and it was just challenging at times. And you look back and reflect, and the one thing that I still hold my head up high about is the time that I was at the Brisbane Lions. I gave everything I had. I think I never, my form never dipped on field. Yes, I was certainly not as good in week in, week out, but I felt like I always played at a highly consistent level throughout my time at the Brisbane Lions, and it's something that I could be proud of. Towards the back end, it became really challenging. Lepers last year, obviously, it just wasn't smooth for a number of reasons. I was on the front page a fair bit, which in Queensland, you're just not on the front page or back page, and a lot of the stories were out there and told about me which just weren't real or factual. So that was tough to deal with. Certain times, I ended up in tears as captain. Like, I just couldn't deal with it, and I ended up, like, in Mitch Hahn's office talking to him and Ben Hudson, just I just didn't know how to deal and cope with it, because it felt like the world was closing in. It felt like everyone blamed me and Leper. It was all our fault and no one else. And it was like, gee, I'm out there performing as best I can and doing it quite consistently and at a high level, and still coming after me for stuff that's not real. So, it was challenging, but, you learn and you grow as a person from it.
Do you feel like someone's throwing you under the bus a little bit?
Yeah, I think so. There's certain people that, I still wouldn't have a lot to do with, and if I seen them, I probably wouldn't, say a great deal to them, and that's rightly or wrongly, that's how I feel, and communicated to me post me leaving there, so it is what it is, and that's okay. They can make up their opinions and can make stories up if they want.
But getting back to in the change rooms, though, you know, you got to, because you got a bunch of young lads. You're the captain. You know, you've just come off the field and you've got done by 10 goals or whatever. What do you, before the coach has a go, I assume that you get the boys in, and how do you keep them up and about so that they're, or on field, you know, it's three quarter time. How do you keep their heads up so they don't fall apart and you end up getting belted by, you know, 120 points?
Yeah, it's a real challenge. Like, you obviously go in and you have your meeting with the coaches straight away, and the world we live in now is mobile phones. Everyone just jumps on that. So when I got to Port Adelaide, it was different. We sort of sat in the rooms after Kenny had talked to us, but then nearly every week there was beers at the front. You didn't have to drink them, but they were the best moments, the special moments. You'd sit there for half an hour and no one else there, just a team that played out there, have a beer and reflect and chew the fat and whatever. And
you talk about footy or talking about anything, just anything else but
yeah,
footy?
Anything. Like, you talk about it. If you've had a good win, you celebrate it and talk about moments in the games or funny things that have happened out there and stuff like that. And, yeah, when you're losing, it's really challenging. And I think you've still got to have that element of hurt, certainly when you lose games of footy. And I think you still got to hang on to that for a period of time. But then once you get back in on a Monday, you've got to bounce really quickly and try and keep it as up and about as you can. And when you're in those times when you're winning two or three games a year, it's a challenge. There's no doubt about that. But we're lucky enough to be in Brisbane. The climate's good. You can sort of do some fun things away from it. So, it's just a great challenge. Something that probably on reflection, I could have done things differently and been a better captain. There's no doubting that. But you live and you learn, and you sit here today and you look back and you've got great fond memories, things that you do different.
So a couple of the generic questions, toughest opponent?
Always found Joel Selwood and Joe Watson to be really tough. So when I sort of came into the team, Vossi had me as a tagger almost to learn off the best. He matched me up on Simon Black in pre-season and run with him, and you just learn. You learn from the great players, and those guys were always the most challenging, and that's something that I always felt my game was really strong defensively just as well as offensively. I always felt like I competed strongly defensively, put body pressure on around contests, and those two guys were so good at that.
Was it their run as well? Because I remember, I think it was when Michael Voss got inducted into the Hall of Fame, he said the toughest opponent was Robert Harvey, because he said he'd run with Robert and then he'd stop and he'd think that Robert was going to stop, but he just keep going, and he's like, "Oh shit, I've got to go again." Is that sort of what made those boys?
Yeah,
so hard?
I think competitiveness, their ability to want to win and win every contest. So you find something out there, and like the contest in work, and they were really strong in that. But then they get to the next contest, and it just taught you that you get to more contests, you win more footy, you win, set your team up. So it was more so that, just their ability to work and competitiveness.
And what about the best play ever played with, and what made them so great?
Yeah, it's a tough one, and it's probably more recent, but Robbie Gray for me, what he was able to do was simply incredible. So you'd see the finished product on a weekend, what he did during the week to get himself right, particularly the back end of his career, but my first couple of years there, what he was doing at training was incredible. Like, he was turning players inside out. He was so strong. It was just like, wow, this is another level. And I probably got Blackie and Brownie in that at the back end of their career. They were certainly superstars as well. I was lucky I played with so many great players. But I think, for me, Robbie, and he's such a great bloke and have a great relationship with him, so he's probably the number one.
Is it like he had the ball on a string sometimes as well?
He's just, what he could do with the footy, he was so crafty, and, just his ability to turn players inside out, strong in the contest. He could win it at forward, mid, back. He was just so clever. He's seen things that other players didn't, and I think that's what made him so special.
Now, let's talk a little bit about your commentary, because like I say, you've gone into the media, you've sold out, and I'm only joking. So, firstly, how did that come about, the Triple M and the Channel 7 and Fox Footy?
Yeah, so the back end of my career, Port Adelaide, I got those blood clots and sort of had to retire on blood thinners, and got to the point where I was like, what am I going to do? Port Adelaide offered me to be a midfield coach with Brett Montgomery, work with him or just below him with the midfield. And I just felt like at the time I just wanted to get away, sort of post-COVID, being an interstate team the whole time, young family, second child on the way. It was like, do I really want to be away every second week? Do I want to give up my weekends and stuff still? And it's silly because I'm doing media stuff, so you give up your weekends anyway. But yeah, and then obviously I enjoyed the media stuff as well, particularly Triple M. I mean, you can have so much fun, and it's just like, it's a bit old school compared to a lot of the other stuff. You don't have to talk about footy necessarily. You can have some fun. It seriously feels like sometimes you're sitting at a pub having a few beers, just chewing the fat. And I really, really love that. Had a few conversations with Triple M, and then it was sort of, the plan was to stay down in Adelaide and sort of forge a career there, and love every second of it. But the wife really wanted to get back up here to Queensland. She'd been here her whole life, grew up here, and just hated the cold weather, which is understandable. Queensland's climate's outstanding. So yeah, it just sort of grew from that. The plan was to try and get a full-time radio gig, and then an opportunity came up to be a commercial finance broker through my father-in-law, who's in demolition. So yeah, went down that path and have loved it and continue to do the media work. So I still do radio on a Saturday morning for Adelaide, Dead Set Legends with Cal Ferguson and Tomo. So that's good. And then do the footy commentary as well. And as I said, it's, you can go and have some real good fun in the Triple M box calling footy.
Did it take you a little bit of time to get used to it? You know, when to talk, when not to talk, what to, you know, because you are correct. Like when I go to the footy, I usually put Triple M on for the commentary because you guys are very entertaining to listen to. So, but did it take you a while to sort of get used to how it all flows? Because there is a rhythm to it.
Yeah, there certainly is. You've got to just be aware of what's happening in the game, and you probably think you just turn up and just call, but it's important that you give the callers, they're the main show, they're the ones calling it, and we get the opportunity if the ball goes out or we see something happening in play to be able to jump in and jump out. So you've got to work on your timing a little bit, so that's a great challenge. And it did take a little bit of time, but the more you do with the team, you work each other out. And the good thing with Queensland is we just love having a good time, and Brisbane are going really well at the moment. Hopefully the Suns can as well. So we turn up, have good fun with each other, get into our work for a few hours, and then get out. And still do a bit of footy talk as well with Neds as well. So still got a little foot in the door with footy, but yeah, sort of shifting away.
So commercial point finance, you mentioned it before. What is it and what do you do there?
Yeah, so we look after businesses, any small to medium-sized businesses looking for finance, more so in equipment, but we can do anything. So again, that's something I've never done before, and it sort of landed on my doorstep a little bit. Took the opportunity. Brendan Scotter, who's the director of the companies in Sydney, went up, had a couple of meetings with him, and we go and source finance now for clients that need it. Either people that don't have time or that they may be tricky scenarios. So we try and be the finance guy for small to medium-sized businesses that may need equipment finance or cash flow finance, or there's so many different options out there as well if someone's looking to expand or something like that grow. So, yeah, if anyone's out there and wants to get some finance, feel free to give me a call or email me.
Give it a plug.
Yeah, well, Commercial Point Finance, phone number's 0400 710 877, and T. Rockcliffe, just my last name, at cpfin.com.au.
And you enjoy it?
Yeah, love it. Yeah, again, it's different to anything, but it's still a little bit the same in that you're competing to win, try and win clients and get the best deal for the client. So you're comparing and sourcing. Sometimes you take on other brokers, sometimes you don't. Sometimes, so there is an element, but you're always helping people. I mean, the first couple of deals I did, there was for people that were effectively a startup and give them an opportunity to get their businesses up and going. And I've had a lot of startup sort of truck drivers that are going out on themselves for the first time. So they're complex deals, but it's rewarding when you're able to go out there and get finance for them and give them an opportunity to potentially set up the future and the rest of their life. But it's a challenging time at the moment with everything, the way the world is at the moment. I mean, small to medium-sized businesses are the ones that feel it the most. I think the fuel prices certainly play a factor. Insurances are up, rego's up. So it just cuts into the bottom line and how much they can make. So it is a great balance. And I love doing it. It's challenging. As I said before, you're making a lot of cold calls and trying to drum up business, but it's very rewarding at the same time.
Cool, very cool indeed. Now, before we wrap it all up, do you want to give yourself a bit of a shout out on your socials and whatnot? You want to give yourself a bit of a
out there. Yeah, it's all a bit funny in it. Social media, starting to fire up a little bit on Twitter every now and then. It's just my name. I think you'd be easy enough to find me. So
Google Tom Rockcliffe and it comes up.
Yeah, that's right. They'll all pop up, Instagram and Twitter. And I've got a Facebook page now as well for the business. So Tom Rockcliffe Commercial Point Finance.
Cool. Very cool indeed. Well, thank you so much for coming in today, Tom. I really do appreciate your time.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me, Goff. Shame we didn't have another hour so I could talk longer about myself.
No, well, mate, like I said, originally, I'm a footy nerd, man. I could dead set do this literally all day. Because I just love it. But that does bring us to the end of the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. Make sure you like and subscribe. Leave a friendly comment. 5 stars is always good. And of course, beernutsproductions.com is your one-stop shop for all your entertainment needs. So until next time, we will talk to you then.